Welcome to a very special episode of the MS Dev Show, recorded from the Channel 9 stage. If you're not familiar with the show, we are an independent podcast that covers Microsoft-related technologies, and we also publish out on Channel 9, so it's a real honor to be up here. So I'm Jason.
I'm Carl.
And this is a little bit different than what we normally do. Definitely nice not having to stress out about the audio, so this is really cool. So how's your build experience been so far?
It's been pretty good. I've been at Build for 5 times now, and every year it just gets better and better. The keynotes were amazing. They have a lot of great sessions where you can not just talk about technology, but talk to the engineers behind the technology. So that's always a really good experience about Build, one of the main reasons why I love coming here.
Yep. And I'm so glad that it's in Seattle, Cloud City.
Yep.
So, and now I live here, so it's really close for me. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of the Build announcements that we thought were interesting and kind of give a little bit of a personal take on these things. So what I wanted to start with was Project Emma, which was such an amazing video that got played during the first day keynote. And that's really close to my heart because my dad and my grandfather both have Parkinson's, so I can really relate to this. Basically, it's this watch that you end up wearing, and it ends up making it so that somebody who is, from the tremors is unable to draw. It actually steadies their hand and makes it so that they can draw.
Well, and not only that, but one thing that they didn't show on there is, like, people with Parkinson's, their hands are unsteady, drawing is one thing, but it's also difficult for them to feed themselves.
Yeah.
So this is, one thing that really is life-changing and gives them a little bit more independence.
Yeah, so Microsoft really is changing the world. I mean, it's something that we like to say all the time, but really are changing the world. And then, it really goes back to what Satya always says. He says that diversity and inclusion helps us build better products for a diverse audience, and this is just such a great example of that. So what was one of your favorite things?
So going to, like, my number one thing was learning about XAML standard.
Mm-hmm.
Being somebody who grew up as a Windows Phone developer and into UWP, XAML is one of the core technologies that builds that. And then when you look at Xamarin Forms, that uses XAML too, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So just like what .NET standard is doing for .NET, XAML standard will be doing for XAML. And one thing that's really important to note too is that this is really early in the days of this XAML standard, so they're looking for tons and tons of feedback on how they should be doing things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I was a little bit misinformed at the beginning, I thought that they had already started this and it was, like, based on one of the two flavors that I had mentioned, but they're really looking at, what choices they need to make to make this as painless and smooth as possible, as well as gives them the greatest set of capabilities going forward. But, once that's available, we'll be able to target not just all the Microsoft technologies, but we'll be able to build for the other platforms too. That was one of the big things that Microsoft has made very clear during these sets of keynotes, is they're not just about Windows anymore. They're making about everybody's platform better. And that's really exciting to me as a developer.
Yep.
So that really opens up what I can do and what my reach is. I'm not stuck on the Windows platform. I can hit all the others as well.
Exactly. And anytime you make it so that I can write one set of code and use that knowledge to write, to basically reuse that code and have it work exactly the same.
That's the
everywhere
dream.
Else, yes. having XAML and then this other thing that's like XAML-ish,
That's hard.
I'm glad that we're getting away from that world, so that's great for developers. Which actually brings me into my next pick, which was .NET Standard, and it's kind of the same theme, right? So now .NET is .NET is .NET.
Yeah.
I've talked about on the show before quite a bit, where these different variants of .NET came out, it was like I had a different set of tooling, and maybe unit tests were there, maybe they weren't. And I always wanted .NET to be .NET. When I wrote my .NET code, I wanted to be able to run the same set of unit tests and use that code everywhere.
Well, and then they had the solutions of the PCLs, but then you had to realize, like, if I want this platform and this platform, that means I have to target less code. I don't have
exactly
as much available, which made my job actually harder. So this is actually bringing that back, especially .NET Standard 2, which really is the full .NET 4.6.1.
Yeah.
It makes that available across all the different platforms, ASP.NET Core.
Great API coverage.
Yeah, that's just excellent.
Okay,
really,
what was your
excited
next pick?
About that. The next pick I was actually kind of sidelined by this, but Azure IoT Edge.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an IoT developer. I do that professionally. And being able to take like these APIs that we normally have to call up to Azure for and bring them down to the device level.
Yep. That's powerful.
It's so powerful. And it actually blew my mind. It's something that like we should have thought about this earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the demo that Sam George did. So he actually showed this emergency response time, and he had all this critical data going up to the cloud, and the cloud was using that data to make a decision about when to shut a machine down in an emergency situation. And it was showing 2 seconds response time, which is actually pretty good for going through the cloud and applying a machine learning algorithm. But I was sitting there, I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, this is critical. You don't know how reliable the internet connection is. And then thankfully, he pushed the button, took that logic, moved it down to the edge. The response time dropped down to 100 milliseconds, and now the code's running where it should be, and it was the same code.
Yeah, and there's a lot of times you need to make those key decisions, and it may not be an internet outage, but it just may be that you have a large volume of data that your device just hasn't had a chance to send yet, but it has sitting on the device. It can make that short circuiting much, much faster.
Exactly. So again, it's about writing one set of code and having it run where it needs to run, not having to make big modifications to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just about making it so that I can write a piece of code and be more productive. So super excited about that one as well. The next one for me was .NET Snapshot, which kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, and we had a chance to talk to Scott Hunter about this. And when he was telling about this, my mouth just was hanging really low.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit, what is a snapshot?
Yeah, our snap point. When we recorded that episode, our surprise was genuine. So the ability to, in production, have, essentially set, not a breakpoint, but basically a snapshot point at a particular piece of code or a place where exceptions are occurring, and then being able to connect Visual Studio up to Azure, and then essentially cloning, the way I think of it is kind of cloning that production environment, being able to look at all my variable values, and then sort of step forward, essentially. So what we always try to do whenever we're trying to reproduce a problem, is we try to reproduce it on our local machine. Well, now instead of trying to set all that stuff up, we can just bring the actual things that are happening in production without affecting production down to our local machine.
And sometimes that's impossible to get. You're getting these scenarios that are only happening in production.
Yep.
And what's happening as well is all of your variable states are being saved.
Yeah.
And if you're getting that one weird thing, you're like, oh, this is getting filled with this weird value. You can actually step back, especially when you combine this with like application insights, to figure out where that's actually happening.
Yep. So now as a developer, when you say it works on my box, now somebody can say, well, bring down this data and see if this works on your box, which
and,
is great.
And I believe part of it, too, is that Azure will auto snapshots, take these auto snapshots of things that it thinks is weird for you to connect to as well. So being able to bring those down to your device and work on, the things that the AI has figured out, this is some weird outlying data, that's pretty powerful too. And that's something you don't have to write a line of code for. It just comes with the tooling now.
Yeah, and as Scott put it, it's such a great example of how .NET and Azure are better together. They're both amazing products that stand on their own. You don't have to use both of them. But if you use both of them together, then it's a great experience that you can't find anywhere else, which is really great. What's next up on your list?
So the next up is, we've talked about this in the past, but this just got a huge boost, is Project Roam.
Yep.
So this is where you can use a set of APIs by Microsoft, and you can set these kind of almost key value pairs, and you send data, and it'll synchronize between your devices. Mm-hmm. But the really, really cool thing now is it works not just on Android and Windows, but iOS.
Yeah.
And knowing the restrictions on iOS, this is actually kind of mind-blowing.
We're not sure how they're doing it, but it's really cool.
And we will definitely talk to them later to figure out exactly how this is happening. But, being able to have the same state, to be pick up on your iPhone, your Android. You can have an iPad, an Android phone, and a Windows desktop, and it all just works together now.
Yep.
That is really mind-blowing on some level.
Yeah.
But on top of that, this is the feature that powers a lot of the new things that they brought into the keynote pieces as well, like the Cloud Clipboard and Windows Timeline.
Oh, so, I didn't even realize that. That's very cool.
Yeah, because you can see what you're doing on other devices and pick up there. So, that's all exactly what Roam does.
Very cool. Okay. And they have the best code name ever.
Yes. So many puns.
Yeah, so many puns. What did I have next on my list? Oh, the Microsoft Graph, which has actually been out for a while, but more and more stuff keeps getting added to the Microsoft Graph. So if you're go ahead.
This starts from the Office 365 Graph. So that's yep. where it originated. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to make that clear because they mentioned Microsoft Graph all over both keynotes, mm-hmm. but they never stopped to just pause yep. and said, hey, this is where it came from.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important distinction.
Yep.
So once you have that base set of knowledge, or if you don't, you can go look, what is the Office 365 Graph and how are they building it out?
Exactly. So it's not even new, but they basically been using this as a foundation to add new functionality. So the Office Graph the Microsoft Graph started with things like, you know, contacts and your calendar items mm-hmm. and those types of things, making it easy to access those and then access the relationship between people in an organization and how those things all connect. Because as you can imagine, I mean, it really is yeah. a graph structure that connect all those things.
And even our applications have knowledge of this app. So
yeah.
you can build this graph knowledge into your applications, which gives Windows more information about your app and what it's trying to do as well.
Yeah, and it's actually really easy to use. I mean, once you're authenticated, it's pretty easy to traverse through that. You know, there's mm-hmm. There's a me object,
yep.
and then you're sort of the center because you're the one that's authenticated. And then from me, you can traverse that graph and get what you need to get to. But now this is being extended with things like IoT yeah. devices and the relationships between those. Yeah. So I think this is something that, you know, it was mentioned a lot of times in the keynote. I think there's probably a lot of developers that haven't looked into it, but I think this is something where I think this is kind of like a secret winner, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is something to really follow because it's just going to keep, more and more stuff's mm-hmm. going to keep getting added in there, and it's going to get really powerful over time.
Yeah, and the previous session on this stage, as we recorded, was actually about the Fluent Design System, and that was the next thing that I'm really excited about because not only does it bring a lot more polish to the existing UI, but it gives us a lot more easier to use APIs as part of this. So a lot of this is powered by the composition APIs. We've talked to James Clark before about this
yep.
and how that works. And as powerful as they were and as how much cool stuff they've done optimizing, they've always been a little bit hard to use. And yesterday I attended a couple of the sessions on composition, and they're taking some of that stuff that took many, many lines of code and understanding these complex relationships between the objects and turning them into, you know, like one okay. or two lines of code is all you
I was going
to
say,
do.
So it doesn't just look cool. It
yes.
is. It is cool from a developer
yeah.
perspective.
And not only that, but like some of the stuff you just get for free. So there's
I like free.
The visual hinting on the lighting and some of that stuff is going to just be baked into the system going forward.
Okay.
And so, one, you'll get a lot more for free, and the stuff that makes your apps really shine, mm-hmm. it becomes those one or two line things that you're going to copy off of Stack Overflow.
Okay. Well, that's really cool. I like that, because now I can call myself a designer, too. Anything I can put on my resume. So the next thing is the Azure Console. And this is pretty mind-blowing because, you know, we had an episode on the cross-platform mm-hmm. CLI 2.0, which is powered by Python. And I've actually had a chance to use it pretty extensively, the command line version. And I've been using it from Bash, actually, on Windows. So I've been yep. using every technology imaginable. And it's just so easy to use. And it's available, you know, on all my machines. But what they announced was this was basically a cloud console.
So in the Azure portal itself.
Yeah, so when you're in the Azure portal, if you look up on the top right, you'll see like a little command line thing. And actually, they published it a couple days before build. I'm curious how many people saw that button and then, you know, mm-hmm. clicked it out of curiosity. But you click that, and then this magic happens. Because what it does is it provisions a little bit of storage space for you
mm-hmm.
so that it can maintain the state of like kind of where you're at in that command line.
So it's actually a cloud drive.
Yeah, but it's a cloud command line.
And it's also automatically logged in as you.
Yep.
With all of your permissions,
yep.
so that's you don't have to
exactly.
even go through like those few bit of command lines
yep.
to get there.
Because you've already logged into the portal, so it just
yep.
maintains that login.
But it's that nice yep. little polish that makes this even more pleasurable to use.
Yeah, I just push it and I'm good to go. And then you can even go in there and type like top, like it's actually running Linux, which is pretty cool. The command line is all pre-installed. So you can just type AZ, and it will give you, you know, help in there. It'll give you some hints on what you can type. But you can start, you know, listing out your different resource groups, managing all your Azure resources right from there. And then if you jump over to a different computer, push the same button with the same login, you can just continue right where you took off.
So, and then they took it one step further even, and not only announced an Azure app for all the major platforms, so you can go on and manage all your stuff there, but the console, the exact same one, is there as well.
Yep. So if you're out at dinner and like you have,
Don't do that.
Probably a bad design
if it's a work dinner.
If you get to this point where you have to be managing Azure, like you know, while you're out to dinner, like you've probably done something wrong. But if you have to, you can pull out your phone and actually start working on a bash command line managing your Azure subscription, which is just kind of mind blowing. And it's one of those things where, you know, since it's in the cloud, it was just easy to add into the mobile app. So you know, great work there.
Yeah. Yeah, the next thing that I had kind of brings back a previous feature, but it does a better job on it, is the OneDrive Files on Demand.
Yep.
So that was one thing that when we started this podcast, we used OneDrive to kind of sync all the stuff between ourselves. And one of the cool things is like after a while, it would be on your file system and it would be synced to the cloud. And after a while, your file system would be like, I'm just going to delete that. You haven't touched it in a while.
Exactly.
And for us, that worked great. And it disappeared. And we're like, darn it. And they brought it back now. And what I really liked, what I saw about it, it isn't just that they brought this back, but they added a lot more polish to the UI. So it's very, very clear. This is in the cloud. It's in both places. And not only that, but how to manage it. You could just right-click on what that is and tell it explicitly, you know, like, hey, I want it here always. I want to pin it, or I want it in the cloud always.
Exactly.
Or, you know, I want it here for now, but, like, after a while, just...
Yeah, your user interface is the file, you know, is File Explorer.
Yes.
And that's where I want it to be. I don't want to have to go into a separate tool. And so that integration really sets OneDrive apart.
And it's built in and it's not an extra plugin like it was before.
Exactly. And then my next item is actually one that, you know, the partners that I work with, they've been asking for this for various scenarios. You know, obviously, everybody loves SQL Server, but there's scenarios where MySQL and PostgreSQL make a lot of sense. And guess what? They're using Azure. They want to start hosting this in Azure. So one of the big announcements was bringing these databases in as a managed offering. So I can say, you know what? I want to get a MySQL database. Give me one of those.
Well, and sometimes, too, it's you don't want to rewrite your code because you are accessing these databases in different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to add something to this list for you. was Cosmos DB.
Yes.
So I can't believe that
wasn't on my list. Yeah. So Cosmos DB, you know, so the foundation of that came from Document DB, obviously, but tons of huge improvements. So they keep working on making this thing scale to massive levels. I mean, we saw some stats in there. I think it was like 100 million, requests per second. I can't remember the exact stats, but they were kind of mind-blowing stats. You know, most people will be like well under that, so they know that they have a lot of headroom because you're paying for the performance and you're paying for the size of the database. And then what they've done is there's a whole bunch of different interfaces. And in the past, what I've done, I actually found like the MongoDB client library to be really great for working with document databases.
Yep.
So being able to use the MongoDB client interface against Cosmos DB, I found that to be incredibly powerful because I provision my database. That takes a few seconds. And then with three lines of code, I'm now interacting with this fully managed database in the way that I want to.
Yeah, and then in addition, so this isn't just a document database.
Right.
They've also a graph database as well as...
With Gremlin query language.
And then table storage.
Yep.
And what's the fourth one? I know there's a fourth one.
Putting me on the spot. I can't remember what the fourth one is.
But either way, I mean, if you have additional types of data requirements, you can use this same product to get them all done.
Yeah. And then I can imagine, like, down the road, if there's other interfaces that are popular, they might end up becoming databases for Cosmos DB. Obviously, I don't want to speak for the team, but I would love to see that, and it seems like they've set a precedent for being able to create these things. So it just means whatever interface you're most comfortable with is what you can use. So what do you got next?
The next thing that I have is, we mentioned earlier on Project Rome, is the cloud-powered clipboard, including from iOS and Android. So if you have the SwiftKey keyboard installed coming soon, when you copy and paste using that clipboard, it's going to get synchronized to the cloud. So you could get that on your desktop. But what I see is more important is there's like a lot of times like I'll be on my desktop, I want to copy something because you know, like I'm on my phone already and I'm at a website that has some information, you know, maybe it's maybe it's like a weird token or key, yeah. or you
he asked like, how many of you have sent a photo, you know, over email yeah. to yourself?
So now you can copy that from your desktop and yeah. then be on mobile where it's a little bit harder to use a keyboard yeah. or, like you said, getting a picture on there or something yeah. and just paste it in.
And the keyboard was such a clever way of doing that. I mean, that's
perfect. It is. And it's, you know, one of those things that shows like how clever, you know, the collective people at Microsoft are. And like, hey, we have this one technology. We can use it for this so many other things.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that, you know, I would like to see is Microsoft actually has multiple keyboards in each of the stores. You know, yeah. I'd like to see all of them support this just because it is so powerful.
Okay, you got time for one more pick.
One more pick. I'm going to pick the Windows timeline. So I don't know if they exactly said that this is like an Alt-Tab replacement, but it's going to replace whatever, you know, Alt-Tab yeah. is for me, because you can see what you're working on in other devices as well. So just like on the browsers, you can see like, hey, I was using Chrome yep. and on my PC, on my laptop, and on my phone. I can see what I was using on my phone and just pick up what I was doing there. And not only that, but like I could pick up the exact state that I was using PowerPoint on my desktop, on my phone, to quick, you know, do a quick on-the-fly update of something before I send it off to, you know, yeah. somebody I work with.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I was obviously using some of the new design language stuff, too.
Yeah, and part of that is, we're not going to go into it, but the adaptive cards.
Yeah. Okay, so where can people find you, Carl?
You can find me on Twitter, at Carl Schweitzer.
And you can find me on Twitter, at YTechie. At YTechie. And, thank you all for watching. And, you know, enjoy the rest of your build.
You too.
Thank you.